Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show, this debut show. So glad to be with you on FM Talk 106.5. Gotta get used to saying FM Talk 106.5. It's going to take a little time, but very excited. This is the debut of the program. A little quick about me. I've been a fixture on this radio station for quite some time. I think going back to 2009, going all the way back to Sean Sullivan and Wayne Gardner. You could hear me on Wednesdays. Every Wednesday at 8 a.m., but took about a year and a half up in Huntsville, Alabama. I was on WVNN up there. Very grateful. Dale Jackson taught me a lot about radio, but I have since I would say this is more of a homecoming. I'm probably more of a Mobile guy. Graduated from the University of South Alabama as well as Auburn University. Two bachelor's degrees, ladies and gentlemen. So very learned here for you, but. Just a real quick rundown of what this show is going to be, what you could expect. I want to make it a destination for people, what the politics of the state, whatever we're talking about, give you an idea, a taste of that. And I think it's something that this area really deserves, and that's my goal, that's my hope. It's a work in progress, obviously, as I learn more kind of the local temperature, local flavor here. We will reach that destination. So that's my hope. Always welcome feedback, but the show will kind of generate around newsmakers and my well informed opinion about subjects. I am sure you're very much looking forward to that. Coming up, we've got a big show for you today. Coming up here at the bottom of the hour, we got Congressman Bradley Byrne. He is the very first guest of the very first show on FM Talk 106.5. Repetition, FM Talk 106.5. You gotta keep that going. Also on the program today, Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kennan. Gonna have him on. I want to talk to him about, what is this COVID-19 doing to the tourist economy in state? People don't realize just what an integral role the coast plays in Alabama's economy. It's very big. And for whatever reason, whenever CNN does a story about people at the beach, there is a high likelihood that it's in Alabama. Alabama has the shortest coastline in the country. CNN focuses on Orange Beach and Gulf Shores. Anybody find that peculiar? But they like to come out and see if people are social distancing, if they're taking in the waves or whatever it might be, with a mask on, playing mask police, go hanging out at live bait to see if people are social distancing. I find it all bizarre, but I think there's something to that. But we'll talk to Mayor Kennan, and that's in the 10 o'clock hour. And then we're going to make my guest in the 11 a.m. hour. He's going to be a regular Monday fixture in studio, State Representative Matt Simpson. A lot to talk about there. Prisons, that prison reform, what that entails, and the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice is coming after Alabama, and they found a bunch of a lot of bad stuff going on in Alabama's prison system. And the reason why this is so important, we've known about this for quite some time, about how in disarray Alabama's prisons were. But there's a lot of malfeasance from the prison guards, prison staff there, and federal charges last week. So I guess that begs the question: if we were under this scrutiny, what is going on here? Why are we finding out about all this? And furthermore, why is it the federal authorities? Why is it the state in the game here? Why is it the Attorney General's office in this? Why did it take a federal investigation into something that's a state issue? You always hear Kay Abbey talk about we want an Alabama solution to an Alabama problem. Well, where is that Alabama solution? Why is it taking so long? And the longer this goes, the likelihood increases that the federal government's going to take the Alabama prison system into some kind of receivership. Big deal, you might say. Who cares? No, they will do two things. They will release prisoners or inmates out that probably shouldn't be out there. Ask California how that worked out. And then they'll send Alabama a bill, an invoice, and say, hey, you got to pay for all the great work we did to your prisons. That is that's not a good look at all. You would expect better. It's always been, for whatever reason, something lawmakers couldn't find an agreement on. And even with Governor Ivey talking about going at it on her own for new prison construction, we're still kind of waiting to see how that's going to play out. But we will get into all of that with Representative Simpson, so very much looking forward to that. I have Sean Sullivan in here holding my hand for my very, very first show. You know, I'm like trying to find where, you know, the copy machine is, right, and all that stuff, and he's guiding me in the right direction. I kind of know. But,
maybe,
you
know. Maybe. Right direction.
Well,
yeah. In a direction.
A direction. Somehow it worked out. I found the microphone, and I am sitting in the studio now.
But it is really cool having you in here full time. I mean, you mentioned it. We've been you and I've been talking for a decade, and to have you as part of the family, man, we're fired up. We're happy.
Well, we got to make it execute it now. It sounded like a great opportunity to me. I think, you know, everybody likes to talk about where I just left Huntsville, as that's the booming part of the state. Mm-hmm. But tell you guys, don't underestimate what's going on down here in the population. Everybody talks about how much Madison County and Limestone County are growing. Baldwin County is still going to be the biggest by far growing county in the state of Alabama. So, you know, there's a lot going on here. It needs to be talked about. It needs to be highlighted. That's very important, I think. And that's why when I was like looking at this, I said, man, this is a place that gets overlooked. And yeah. I
wonder why, too. I mean, just I'd love to get your perspective after being in Huntsville. We talk about the bookends of the state. South Alabama, North Alabama have a lot in common with business announcements and moving forward in growth. But North Alabama seems to have the attention in Montgomery the way South Alabama doesn't.
It's the federal component. There's so many
Redstone
more.
And all that.
The federal dollars and the highlighting, you know, the Secretary of Commerce, Greg Canfield, puts all of the that's where the tech is, and I guess that's where they like to showcase and highlight that it's not Alabama. You know, like when you think of Alabama and you're from Illinois or whatever, you think backwoods, backwaters, backwards place. You still see, you know, the water hoses and the dogs of Birmingham turned on protesters and that kind of thing. But they tend to go more toward Huntsville. But I'll tell you something, Sean. Up there in Huntsville, they feel like they're kind of the bookend of the state, too, that they're out of that Montgomery mix. And to be honest, historically, it's always been Birmingham-Montgomery, that corridor, right? Mm-hmm. But Mobile, even though it's the oldest, it's the, you know, the grandfather of the state, if you will, it's been here longest, it's always been perceived to be some kind of, you know, one of those folks down there. They, you know, they don't really get into the game here. That it's like I said this last week. It's almost treated sometimes like a runaway province, and you saw that with the whole toll bridge controversy.
Sure, we're the Puerto Rico of Alabama. I mean, but you know, you're talking about tech. It takes a lot of tech to build an LCS. For also, you know what I'm saying? There's a technology that goes into building aircraft with Airbus. You know, there's a lot of tech down here.
But that's not the federal. LCS, yes, obviously, but the missiles and the FBI.
Yeah, Redstone's got stuff going on.
Those guys really, but the federal delegation, or at least Richard Shelby, really, really, they've gone big on Huntsville. They see that as the, you know, they move that FBI headquarters there.
Mm-hmm.
They have put a lot of eggs in that basket, and it's not just Redstone and the federal component. They got a new car facility there, so it's just. That tends to be what the crown jewel is these days. But I think this is the next crown jewel. We're going to work to make that happen. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Gotta get used to saying that. Give us a call, 251-343-0106. That's 251-343-0106. Nothing like the art of live radio, as I am learning a new studio and all the protocols involved. Thank you so much for joining us. Coming up in the next segment, we'll hear from Congressman Bradley Byrne, the very first guest on the very first Jeff Poor show on FM Talk 106.5. Got Sean Sullivan at the board holding my hand here to make sure that I don't get too awry. Real quick shout out to my friend Ben. Helped me move in. You ask somebody to move in and people just, oh gosh, please no, please don't ask me, please no. And then Ben showed up on Saturday and up a flight of stairs with a couch, a washer dryer, and a desk,
right?
That
Heavy stuff,
but I wanted to make sure that I gave credit where credit was due in my big move, which happened in the matter of 48 hours from Huntsville to Mobile. No rest for the weary here, if you can imagine. Sean, that flight out at 9:30 in the morning and then back.
Yeah, I was your Uber yesterday. We did good. Yeah. So Jeff, Jeff not only moved down from Huntsville to Daphne, he then flew back to Huntsville, got his vehicle, and drove back to Mobile last night. So
cleaned an old apartment and now back in ready to go. This is my second. I guess if you count my childhood, it's my third time around in Mobile.
It's a charm, man.
When I was a child, I lived in my family lived in Sims for about a year and a half, and then obviously University of South Alabama was here for 3 years. Know the area well. This is really where I got into journalism. I've been with Lanyap since 2005. So you think we've been together? Rob Holbert and I have been together a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But now Breitbart News, Yellowhammer News, Lanyap, and so proud to say FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, we are too. It's and number one, just the quality of the show, but number two, you're part of something that's just not happening in radio stations around the country. They are doing less, not more. We're different, so we do more when everybody else does less. And so now from 6 in the morning till 2 o'clock, there's folks doing shows right here from the studio.
Well, and it's local.
It really gets y'all.
You know, there's plenty of guys out there that do national politics. We're going to do national politics here, but that local component. Why is this about national politics important to Alabama? That's where you want to come here for that. If you just want the hot takes or whatever. I mean, there's plenty of places you go watch Fox News all day or at night, I guess. But this is the goal is to make this a lot about Alabama as much as possible. Some things to talk about in news I got on the list here. I wanted to get into this story about the sports ratings being down for Major League Baseball and the NBA, way down. People want to say it's tied to the Black Lives Matter stuff and the social justice movement, but I think this disruption has showed people that they could live without sports every day. I don't think it's necessary. I mean, that's probably a huge part of it. But people, they get on with their daily lives, and they're not, I got to be in front of a TV at 7 p.m. to watch the opening, the tip-off or the first pitch or whatever. Don't have to do that anymore. It takes that out of it. You get in your routine, and here we are, sports. And this is where I tie it into here. How will that play out when we get to college football season? Will you have that same kind of effect? Or will they steer clear of all of the politics and people be just as excited about it because it's such a tradition, it's such a cultural component of what goes on in the South?
I mean, just to add to this for a second, I worry about this because I'm excited for college football, but I'm worried about if it's not the same as it's always been, will I not like it as much? You know what I'm saying? If there's not crowds there, there's not people in the stands, the pregame show's not the same. I worry how superficial my love for college football is. It may be fine.
Are you a football fan or are you an Alabama fan?
I am probably Alabama fan first, and then SEC football. And beyond that, you've known me long enough that if it's outside the SEC, I really, you know, I don't watch a lot of that.
Because if I'm an Auburn fan, if they're playing ice hockey, I'll tune in if it's, you know, high enough stakes, right? Because I'm an Auburn fan, and that
football and basketball, I'm an Alabama fan. Beyond that, nah, I can't watch the baseball.
I didn't do the baseball, the softball, all of it. It could be tiddlywinks or whatever it might be. I'm you know, if Auburn's playing for a championship or something, I'm in front of the TV. But that's where I think, you know, people will cheer for their hometown. That's the whole idea of Alabama football, though, right? You know, it goes back to, you know, we're 60 years past the Civil War. The South's kind of, you know, trotting along, beleaguered. And then we get to the 20s, and Alabama football goes and wins the Rose Bowl. And the South rallies around the University of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then, you know, even though you might have gone to Auburn or you might have gone to, you know, wherever, you cheer for Alabama if you were from Alabama, because that was the state team. And you pass it down generation to generation to generation. And then Bear Bryant comes along, and he does well, and that builds that fan base up even more. And then later on, obviously, Nick Saban. But the cultural component, it's not necessarily that, I live and die and, you know, eat the spread offense or whatever. No, you're cheering for your state. You're cheering for Alabama or Auburn. Auburn probably in the last 40 years, 50 years or so, has risen up to that level. But that's where I think what you're seeing now with the NBA and Major League Baseball, it's less about it. These are products that are just entertainment, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then where you actually have an invested interest in it, and you're wanting to, you know, you want to cheer for the state, you want to cheer for the hometown team, maybe that's different. Now, not to say, you know, the LA Lakers or Los Angeles rally behind those guys, or,
well, I was
going to
say the Braves or the Yankees or something like that on the baseball side. Those people are like, they're like Alabama football fans.
But for whatever reason, the national ratings aren't really there. So right. People in Alabama just don't care about the Orlando Magic. For, you know, fair enough. To Thursday night on TNT, you know, and watching the basketball game, they're trying to make it like a national sport. The idea was, well, people are at home, have nowhere to go. What else are they going to do? They can't go to the movie theater. They can't go to a concert. They can't go to the club or the bar after 11 p.m. in Alabama. More on that later. But that was the idea that, well, people are going to really watch sports. No. And, I do think this Black Lives Matter stuff and all of that is contributing to this decline in at least the TV ratings. But maybe it's going to be one of these situations where the big market teams are the only ones that are going to get eyeballs. And the Oklahoma City Thunder or the San Antonio Spurs or whatever, who's going to tune into that? Just the people at Oklahoma City, and that's not going to be enough to be a national draw. So, but my original point was, I think people have kind of learned, I don't need to be watching. I don't have to watch sports all the time. This is just part of that. That the sports is kind of on the decline in what is important to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these professional
sports.
So what
are they supplementing it with?
There's so much going on in people's lives, right? Are you, you know, we're talking about how at the end of your show, there's, you know, five times as many people looking for jobs as there are jobs available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after a long day of job searching or dealing with, you know, where am I going to put my kids? Do you really want to sit there and say, hey, I can't wait to watch the Brooklyn Nets play or whatever. You know, maybe it's just not as something you have time for. It's a luxury of your time.
Maybe. It depends. I mean, for me, I'm not a good one to ask because it was not, other than that Saturday, you know, Saturday college football.
Which is just for a few months a year.
Yeah, that's my sports, you know. My life didn't change much. Things I like to do for fun are socially distanced as they are. And in our business, you know, we've all still worked all through this. So.
Yeah, but you watch these cultural trends. What are people doing? Why aren't they a sports craze? There's not a good story there either, right? It's not like a Tiger Woods or something. You know, I think people have soured on LeBron James. Mm-hmm. And in baseball, how many Major League Baseball players can you name?
maybe 10.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe 10.
It's not as household as it used to be. It's America's pastime, but is it really? You know the teams, but you know the players. And I wonder if that... You don't have the superstar, you know?
Okay, but is this the... You're saying that this is a temporary situation, or do you think this is long-term, that it never comes back, the Oklahoma Thunder interest never comes back?
It might be where we're turning the corner here, and that we're heading in a whole different direction, and people will find other things to do besides watch sports, because they already are finding other things to do besides watch sports, right? They're already, you know, there's hundreds of social media things to do and video games. I don't know, like, what are you doing in your quarantine? And people are just like, you know, this isn't that bad. But you would think you would think with people trapped at home, these sporting events, these marquee sporting events, would draw bigger numbers, and they're just not. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick timeout. We'll be back with Congressman Bradley Byrne. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind, but Mama tried. They began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. River and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high.
And welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Still to come on the program today, Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kinnon will be with us. That's in the next hour. And at 11 o'clock hour, we'll have State Representative Matt Simpson. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But joining us now on the line, my very first guest, always been very good to me in my radio endeavors. I would like to welcome to the program Congressman Bradley Byrne. Congressman, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you doing?
Just getting adjusted. It's a little choppy this morning, but we'll get there. But hope everything is going well for you.
Things are going very well for me. I wish I could say things are going very well for the country right now, but they're really not. But they're going well for me personally.
Well, tell me this. There's a lot of discussion about this next phase of whatever coronavirus relief might be. It doesn't seem very hopeful when we get down to it. Just listening to all these national pundits and some of your colleagues that were on the Sunday shows yesterday, there just doesn't seem to be any hope of getting to a consensus.
No, I don't think. I mean, when you had Mark Meadows and Steve Mnuchin go two or three times to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and give them ever better deals, and they turn them down every time, that shows that they don't want a deal. They want to make things as painful as they can for the American people because they think that helps them politically in November.
Yeah, and their proposal, it was clearly a messaging bill, but I believe... Steve Scalise said it's like everything but every liberal wish list act or something like that, referring to it, that there's a lot more that they want to get accomplished, the Democrats in the House want to get accomplished, than coronavirus related relief.
Oh no, never leave crisis without doing something bigger with it than you could otherwise. I mean, they take advantage of this situation completely. They think they're going to run the tables in November. And so they believe that they can get an even better deal with themselves in January after they win in November than they can with us. So this $3 trillion idea that they've got out there will balloon up to be a lot bigger than that. Somebody was joking last week in Washington that in Washington, when you've got one group at $1 trillion and another group at $3 trillion, the compromise is $4.5 trillion. So... I just don't like where we're headed at all.
Well, and that makes me, I wonder, we're in this election season. What happens after the election? You know, will that, if there's divided government, right now I guess everyone seems to be looking toward November 3rd and don't want to get caught with the hot potato. We don't want to get the blame for not doing anything. Maybe that helps move things along. But if we get into January, like you said, and you do have divided government, even though Democrats think they're going to run the table, but let's say Republicans keep the Senate or the White House or whatever, And there would seem to me there's even less of an incentive to really get anything done.
Well, if there's divided government after the election in November, and that would be my prediction, by the way, then I think everybody says, okay, there's not going to be some magic change in everything that's going to give us a different scenario. So I'd actually think that we might get some sort of a deal. It won't be a very pretty deal in November or December. But if the Democrats did run the table, then I don't think they'll just shove everything into January so they can control it. I mean, that's going to be their game. That's the game right now, by the way. They firmly believe that they're going to run the tables in November, and they'll be in full control of the government come January.
What is the ideal? I mean, there's a lot that the Republicans are discussing, but what is the ideal Republican relief package? Is it because there's a lot of discussion that we're incentivizing people to stay out of work. Do you take care of that? And I guess the liability protection, can you do that on the federal level? I mean, other than that, maybe some more cash disbursements. I mean, what is that? What would that look like?
Well, most of us that I've been in conversation about that is we've got to do everything we can to prop up the private sector economy and keep people working. That's what we want. As part of that, we've got to make sure that there's adequate health care things that the private sector needs to stay open. But also, we've got to have schools open so that kids go back to school and mom and dad won't have to come to take care of them. So there's sort of a multiple list here, but it all goes back to getting the private sector healthy again. Because there's this myth in Washington that somehow Washington, the government, can sustain the American economy indefinitely, and that's just not true. We have to get this economy back.
How big of a game changer would it be for a vaccine, even though it may take some time to where it's readily available for everybody? What does that do? How does that change things, you think?
Well, it is the game changer, and we know we're going to get it. We don't know precisely when. We've heard everything from by December to next July, but sometime over the next 6 to 10 months, we're going to have a vaccine. Then you've just got to get it out there to as many people as you can, so the distribution of the vaccine is a big deal. Now, I remember as a child that we went to an effort like this to combat polio, and all of us, you had to show up at certain public places and you got a sugar cube with the vaccine in it. We're going to have something of that magnitude to get this vaccine out there. And once you get it out there broadly enough, you create true herd immunity, then you can go back to normal. Between now and then, we're going to continue to have these problems we're having right now, which is it flares up in this area and you have to do extraordinary things, and it dies down in that area, and it flares up in another area. And we had a problem in Mobile 2 months ago, and it seemed to have died back down. Now the cases have come back in a big way in both Mobile and Baldwin County, so it's flared back up here.
Well, all of this relief and all of these, these packages meant to help people and help the American economy, do you have this fear that it's kind of like Obamacare? Once you give something to people, it's harder to take away. How are you decoupling the federal government's role in the American economy right now? What kind of hurdles do you think that is going to present?
Well, you're seeing the biggest hurdle right now. I personally think we made a mistake at setting the unemployment insurance benefit at $600 a week. It's too high for most states in America. Well, now that we should be at a point where we can dial that back, Democrats said, no, that's the starting negotiations, okay? You're right. Once you get something like that, it's hard to take it back. But on the private sector side, I think the PPP loan program has actually worked pretty well. And everybody understands that that's not a permanent thing. We're not going to sit there and prop up small businesses forever. But it's worked for the time period we've had it in place. We want to extend it out some more. And I think everybody understands once we get to a normal economy, that program will go away. So there's good programs that work, and you can see them being dialed back. This unemployment insurance thing has turned out to be a debacle, because I know if you drive around, and just drive around the Mobile Baldwin County area, there are plenty of help wanted signs, now hiring signs. But why, if you're an individual that's making more money sitting at home, why would you give that up to go to work to make less money? And that's the problem. We've got to get rid of that disincentive.
Is there a way to tailor it to where the need is, or you know, is that just a bridge too far, given the political environment right now? Is there a way to tailor it toward need, to be more, you know, efficient with the dollars here and put them in the where the need is? Or are we just going to, the best we could do is a one-size-fits-all approach?
Well, I mean, the Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, has come up with what I think is a pretty good idea, which is every state needs to design a system where nobody gets more than 70% of what the average wage is in that state. And so that was what they forward with Pelosi and Schumer, and Pelosi and Schumer said, no, we want the full $600. Well, then Mark Meadows and Mnuchin go back to him and say, okay, we'll do a bridge for you for the next 4 months. We'll continue $600 for 4 months. And Schumer and Pelosi said, no. Well, we can't give them anything they'll say yes to. That's what that tells me. So right now we have nothing. We have no extension of PPP. We have the $600 is gone. The other things that are out there are not going to be renewed unless some miracle happens in the next few weeks. By the way, we know there's over $500 billion in money from the original CARES Act that has not been spent. Over 50% of the money we sent to the state and local governments has not been spent. So some of this might say, okay, doesn't bother me because they haven't spent what we've already sent to them. But I do worry about these small businesses, and I do think we need to get an extension of that program. And I know that we need to do some more on the healthcare side. But we can't just give Pelosi and Schumer whatever they demand. There's got to be some reason.
Well, they don't want, it seems to me they don't want Donald Trump to have a victory. That is one of the biggest impediments, that if they do something, then the fear is, for them at least, the president can make it a victory and it makes him look good. That seems to be kind of the story of the Trump presidency in this dynamic with the Democrats in Congress, that anything that might be seen as a victory for the president is something we're going to steer clear of.
I think you're right. And they view the trajectory of the campaign between here and November as a trajectory that's good for them, and they don't want to alter that trajectory. Now, here's their problem. At some point, Joe Biden's going to become more of a focus here. He's going to get out of the basement, and he's going to have a vice presidential running mate and all that sort of thing. And the trajectory is going to change. I mean, if you watch presidential elections, as I have and many other people have over the last several decades, these things change as you get closer to November. So they're not going to be able to just sort of keep the trajectory the way it is. But between now and whenever that starts shifting, they're not going to budge. And what they told me by their inactivity last week is that they like where they are and they're going to stick to where they are. Literally, when I left Washington on Friday and I went to the floor staff, the floor of the House, I said, okay, what should I be prepared for going forward? They literally shrugged their shoulders and said, we have no idea. That's not a good sign.
Joined by Congressman Bradley Byrne here on FM Talk 106.5. Congressman, early on, there's a lot of discussion about China and what threats China posed, and then, you know, the whole virus being of Chinese origin. Have we kind of lost track of that narrative? That seems like a winner for Republicans, but it doesn't seem to be getting much oxygen, or am I missing something?
No, you're not missing something. China is a bad actor, okay? They were a bad actor at the beginning of this disease. Even if you believe, as most people do, that China didn't purposefully create the disease, they certainly were not forthcoming about it. Hid information, we think, probably have also not just hid information, but altered information so that we don't have what we need in order to adequately respond. They continue to be bad actors economically. They continue to steal the intellectual property of American companies. They continue to try to steal stuff from the American government with regard to what the progress we're making on finding a cure for the disease. And they are absolutely a bad actor in other places around the world, particularly in the Western Pacific. We're seeing more and more of their operations in the Middle East, and even here in this hemisphere. So the biggest challenge for America going forward is going to be how to deal with what China has become, which is just a bad actor. And I was sat through a briefing last week, a classified briefing on election security. And, you know, China is a bad actor when it comes to security in our elections next year. The Democrats don't want to talk about it, but they are a bad actor in terms of our election security.
I mean, it just seems to me that the left's narrative, they are, or the left's idea is they want Trump to take the fall for all the bad stuff going on in the country right now. And that is why that whole China question is avoided. That's why it doesn't get showcased. I mean, obviously, the media is what it is, but it seems like that is doing a disservice, you know, because this, even depending on how you perceive the threat, it's undeniable that China is a threat.
Well, you know, we went through this years ago when Mitt Romney, as a Republican nominee, said Russia's a threat, and Democrats said, oh, no, Russia's not a threat. I remember literally 4 years ago sitting in a House committee meeting talking about some defense issues, and I'm saying we've got to have this because of what Russia's, you know, the committee looked at me and said, why do you Republicans always talk about Russia being a threat? That same Democrat literally got up on the floor of the House when they were counting the votes of Electoral College and sought to block the counting of Alabama's Electoral College votes because Russia inappropriately interfered with our election in Alabama. I mean, they just completely changed on Russia. They'll probably do that on China.
Congressman, we got to leave it there, but you know, I really appreciate your time, and thank you for being the first guest on this this incarnation of the Jeff Port Show.
Well, Jeff, I'm honored to be your first guest down here in Southwest Alabama.
Well, we'll do it all again real soon, and best of luck to you.
Thank you.
That was Congressman Bradley Byrne here on the program. We're going to take a break. We will return. This is FN Talk 106.5.
Poncho met his match, you know, on the deserts down in Mexico. Nobody heard his dying word.
I hear Richard Bent picking on that red guitar. So get around, now get around, chilling me down. We're just getting down, chilling, getting loud.
And welcome back to the Jeff Port Show on FM Talk 106.5. Did I hear you say that? FM Talk 106.5, yeah. When you change radio stations, it's tougher to remember because you have all this muscle memory and you just have to break it up. But so good to be with you. The debut of the Jeff Port Show here in Mobile. You're probably wondering, who is this guy? Well, who is this guy on my... Where is, you know, well, what's his face that usually is here? Well, I have a... This is a new show. We are going to be on from 9 to noon. All kinds of local programming on FM Talk 106.5. Really, really, really excited about the direction where things are going. So hopefully we will progress as time moves along. And things, at least until I get my sea legs under me. And the guys, the characters that are here already, they got all that figured out. They'll be fine. But looking forward to interacting with you and the Mobile audience, and we're going to really try to do something really cool here. Want to hear from you, turning up your voice, 251-343-0106, phone, text line, whatever you prefer. You can also hit me up, twitter.com/Jeff_Poor. There's still some other things going on in the news. Real quick before we go to break here, the talk about TikTok and Microsoft and that, big tech right now, it's really hard to figure out what the role is going to be in this election. We've been talking about this for years and years and years as a society, and I guess it all goes back to 2016 and this bizarre notion that somebody saw a post on Facebook and that swayed them from Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump. But I think that narrative's been wrestled away from the left, and the right's commandeered that as Donald Trump Jr. gets, you know, banned, or these members of Congress have been shadow banned on Twitter, Google search results being tampered with. But I'm very skeptical, and I'd be curious to hear from you guys. What role really does the internet or social media play? Do you really rely on that? Let's take, you know, the general election aspects out of this. But I think a lot of us are pretty made, have our minds made up, Republican or Democrat. But let's look at something where maybe your mind isn't made up. But at the primary level, do you really base your decision making on what goes on social media? And maybe you do, but it seems to be it's just a convenient scapegoat for a lot of people. particularly if it's a very bad campaign. See Hillary Clinton 2016. It's a convenient scapegoat to point social media and misinformation on social media. We're spending a lot of time and oxygen on that. Does that really impact your life? Does a crazy person putting up on something on Facebook really impact your life? Nonetheless, it has commanded a lot of attention, and it seems to be where a lot of focus for our policymakers is right now. I mean, they had hearings last week on Capitol Hill. How many times are we going to see Mark Zuckerberg up there before Congress and our, you know, Jeff Bezos of Amazon? Those guys, what role do they really play in our elections? It's something you should keep an eye on. But I would argue probably more economically. It's more antitrust and those type of issues when we think about what, you know, how that is deals with commerce and e-commerce, rather than really the almost condescending way the public talks about, our policymakers talk about the internet and the way they impact the way you think, because you're not smart enough to come to decisions on your own. All right, folks, we're going to take a brief break. Hopefully you can stay with us. This is the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5.
There's always a stage and a beautiful babe to squeeze my life. In my simple way, guess you could say I'm living in the big time.
Make no mistake, an IRS.